Welcome back to Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Chef Cindy Wolf.
And I'm Tony Foreman.
And if you would like to email us with questions, comments on today's topic, you may do so at foremanwolf@wypr.org. And we've been talking about building a cellar, and we have probably a couple more things to talk about, and then we're going to get into talking about maybe having a dinner party or a cocktail party.
The building a cellar is nowhere near as fun as drinking the wine.
Oh, I know. I can't wait to talk about having a dinner party in your cellar. I think that's going to be great. Just another question about stocking that cellar. What about availability of, you know, some of the very popular things right now, Malbec or Pinot Noir or Champagne, you know, as far as ageability?
Well, Pinot is popular right now. Malbec is popular right now. There's any number of things that have a sort of moment of popularity. Oftentimes, if that's the thing that everyone's talking about or is the thing to drink, it also means that oceans of it are being produced that may not be super high quality. So
okay.
If you're going to buy Pinot to age or you're going to buy Malbec to age, you probably want to look to the very top producers. And because of the popularity of the category, that will often mean that the price is going to be kind of premium for those things. Aging Pinot Noir, I would look to wines from Burgundy, which are the original home of Pinot Noir, but also Oregon. And you're in a very strong 2012 being released right now, very strong in Oregon, so good wines for aging.
Great.
Malbec, and I expect you're speaking about Malbec from Argentina, are much more sort of wines from great, big, vibrant personalities. Very much wine of the moment. You know, it's like meat on the grill, you know, nice, cool, fat glass of Malbec.
That's just great to have at home. I mean, those are things you do want to drink on a daily basis.
Exactly. I would say be very mindful of quality on that sort of stuff. There are some brands that have been produced for a decent amount of time that are good quality price ratio. There's an awful lot being produced right now that is not. So I would say consult your merchant and try to get thoughtful advice from them. Those are, with rare exception, I would not age an awful lot of Argentine Malbec.
Okay.
I mean, Cuvelier de los Andes, that is a producer that, I mean, I recently opened a 2005 Grand Malbec, you know, one of those super high point scoring wines, by the way, from years ago. And it's very good, but it's no more fun to drink, maybe a little bit less fun to drink than it was 3, 4, 5 years ago.
All right.
So that is a little bit quicker gratification kind of thing.
What about Champagne? Maybe I'm the only one that wants to collect champagne, but...
Well, non-vintage champagne is not something necessarily to collect, but you have certain moments when you can go... When I would go deeper on non-vintage champagne, when the wines are being based on a very strong vintage, like 2010, most non-vintage champagne, there's a 1 or 2 year base, and then there are lots of other wines that go into it to round out a style. With 2010 as a base... Bicar Salmon is very strong right now. Guy Lamandier is very strong right now. It's just, you know, but there are a lot of growers who are making 2010-based non-vintage champagne right now.
And what do you think are good buys right now? And we'll finish up with that as far as the cellar goes.
Well, by the way, in champagne, if I was buying champagne to cellar, I'd be looking for 2006s for the most part, 2006 and 7. And then 10 will all be strong. So watch for those vintages to be released. Most of the best wines go away from shelves pretty quickly. There are still 2002 is very strong, but there are only so many hanging around still. As to other things that are good buys for aging, I guess the question is how long do you want it to age? Do you want something that's matured for 3, 4, 5 years? Do you want something that's going to have a 10-year life or longer? There's only so many things that will have really reward you for 10 years and longer.
Okay.
In Italy, Barolo and Barbaresco are about the only ones. In France, a few Burgundy, a few Châteauneuf du Pape, Hermitage, and then Bordeaux, the more serious Bordeaux from great years, and Champagne, and believe it or not, wines from Alsace. The great wines of Alsace, white wines that are sometimes a little bit sweet,
live a very
long time. Yeah.
All right.
Maybe the best purchase in white wines at age.
Well, I think that's a good thing to have in your cellar. I mean, that just gives balance to what your choices are with dinner, with your menus that you're going
to
be putting together.
You have to want to drink them. I mean, that's the thing that.
Well, yes, of course.
If you want to do a salmon dish with a quick stir fry of vegetables, it's a little tiny bit spicy, and you have a 10-year-old Gewürztraminer from Alsace that probably didn't cost you more than $15-$20. That's cellared beautifully for 10 years. You may have a fantastic meal.
There you go. So let's talk about doing a dinner party down there. What would you do if you had space in your cellar?
Oh, Well, I would have space in my cellar. So
yeah, right.
I think I like the idea of, there's so many times we visit wine growers over the years, and they have, you know, they want to taste you on the product right in the cellar because of the atmosphere and their barrels around
it's
and their racks and racks of bottles around and
yeah.
their library of old wines around. And,
yeah, exactly.
And I can always remember Giorgio Colluda. He had a door laid out on top of two barrels. And on top of that door, he had this cinghiale prosciutto, this entire leg of freshly made prosciutto from a cinghiale with the foot and everything.
That's great.
And everything's still hanging on there.
Well, what a great opportunity. That's the thing about getting to taste with people like that. It's just so special.
And there's literally, there's a lady who's making focaccia, bringing it in from the kitchen. Like, the focaccia goes on the board that you tear off a piece. And Giorgio's sitting there, and he's slicing just pieces of this prosciutto off. And gives you a glass and said, you know, just, and gives me the wine fief and says, just go and, you know, see what you think of the new vintages, and everything's marked clearly. And
he just let you go around and taste what that's.
And then we started pulling older bottles from his library that was there. So
that's always such a
if I was given, you know, the opportunity to do a tasting in my cellar, I would do it in Giorgio's cellar. With a big door to put
that's a good place to
my only two offerings. I mean, I like the idea of being on your foot in the cellar, looking around, seeing what's there.
Well, that is what's
and
fun.
having like a nice salty snack that makes me want to try older things and the discovery of like, wait, can we open this?
Well, and if, as you said earlier, well, you were talking about, you know, 55 degrees and possibly 80% humidity. It's going to be a little uncomfortable down there. So
yeah, you can be down there in your
jacket.
It
may be the place. It's either going to be refreshing in the summertime to go down there if you feel like being in your cellar in the summertime. And maybe you do have an hors d'oeuvre time down there. And then you come up and you sit on your porch and have dinner. I think that would be very fun. Or I always think of going down there and having dinner in the wintertime. And I like all candlelight anyway. So I have a lot of candles down in the room. It's not going to affect the temperature of the room, and you know, have a really beautiful dinner and have a couple of courses or six or seven and have cheese laid out. And
is Mozart back from the dead to play piano in the corner of the cellar?
No, I don't think so, but I was told the other day by one of my painters that I have a ghost in my basement, so hopefully he won't be joining us. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely have, if as cool as it's going to be, I'd probably start off with a great soup that was really hearty, that was very French and had probably, you know, duck in it, or, you know, some sort of confit to finish that soup, and lots of rich broth, and then move to something, you know, maybe a rich fish dish that has a lot of butter so that you can have a white and move into some.
So you're well insulated.
Yeah, you're well insulated, and you can move into some great red courses, and you're really showing off your cellar. I would do small portions, though, so that you could open up a lot of things. I mean, one of the things we didn't talk about is verticals, and that's one of my favorite things. And when I purchase, I definitely think about, I want to be able to compare this winemaker with this winemaker from this year in this area, this region.
That's the how to put an interesting taste in the other thing is an interesting, whether it's snacks or whether it's a dinner party or however you want to do it, whether it's in your cellar, whether you do it in your kitchen or your living room, when you have more than one thing open at a time is when you really learn something. I mean, that's the thing that, and you talk about
a vertical tasting,
let's say you have a three Chianti Classico from interesting years from a great producer like Monsanto. So the thing about tasting those three Chiantis together would be that even though it's the same site, the same winemaker, the same grapes, raised up in the same way in the cellar, they have the story of three different years to tell. The growing season, the decisions made, what the weather patterns were, when they chose to pick things, when they chose to pull leaves from vines. If they decided to use a little bit more or a little bit less of the different varietals in the blend in certain years. If in 2003 the Canaiolo didn't ripen all the way because of the heat. If in 2004 it was remarkable. And the sum of all those decisions and of all those seasons and all the events during the course of the season, when the vines flowered and when the fruit actually set, all those stories are summed up in the way the wine tastes. And to have all of those complex stories next to each other from those 3 years, if you can slow yourself down enough to take those things in sensually, super, super interesting. And to be able to share that with someone or with some other persons, where everyone takes a moment out of life to focus on those things, the living art that's in those three glasses, super interesting. And that to me, that's what, for me, why I keep a cellar. It's not just I want to have things. I'm not just collecting baseball cards.
Right.
I want to collect living art that I can set up to share and set up in a nice situation with a particular dish or in a situation with people that I care about to share with.
Mm-hmm. And to celebrate the
wine that's in that bottle. And exactly.
All the things that we do at the table.
Well, and the thing about wine is always a story of not just the people, the place, the culture, the traditions, the economic conditions at that time. In 2001, was he worried about the harvest, the rains that were going to come at harvest? Was 2000 a tough year? Did he harvest a little bit earlier because he was feeling that pressure? In 2004, was he feeling flush? And because he'd had a good couple of years, and he went ahead and tried to wait through the rains and was being bolder about things. And you know, all of those decisions, all of that, you know, all of that character is summed up in the liquid that's in those bottles.
And the aspect of farming is just such a gamble. I know that, is it, what vintage is it recently that they had hail, and it just, it's amazing what hail does to the vines. It goes right through the leaves and just destroys the grapes. And if any of the clusters have damaged
grapes.
Yeah,
if the leaves aren't healthy, then the grapes are not going to live properly.
Right, and even if the clusters are there, then, you know, if that cluster has that damage, they have to pull each one of those grapes off when they go to the sorting table. I mean, it's amazing, you know, what 1 hour or 5 minutes of something damaging can do to that.
Yeah, five bad minutes, that product. Reduce your crop and your revenue by 50%.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
That is the nature of it, for sure.
Mercy of, of nature.
That sort of tasting we're talking about is a vertical tasting where you have the same wine for several years, or multiple years at least. And then horizontal tasting is where you have different growers. Let's say it's an Oregon Pinot Noir producer. Steve at Lene makes really fantastic Pinot Noir in the Dundee Hills. And his 2010 single vineyard Jill's bottling is terrific. And you have that next to the Irie, which is an old grower, probably 2 miles away from where he is in sight, but the soil has significantly changed in his 2010, and he makes very different decisions. And in 2010 from Beaufrère, who makes big, robust wine. Three gigantically different styles, three very different sites, but the same year.
Mm-hmm.
And what you get there is a reflection, the reflection of the year is the same, but what happens in the microclimates and what happens with the people making the wine is different. And again, you have when you have those things at the same time together, and I'm not really advocating you should sit down and drink those three bottles of wine at the same time entirely yourself, because you'll probably be quite drunk.
Right.
But you don't have to finish anything. The point is to taste it and to share it and to talk about it with someone else who has an enthusiasm for that. And that's a pretty exciting thing.
It is.
And if you do that, let's say you do that with those 2010s right now, maybe in 2020 at age 10, do the same tasting with the same wines that you've stored correctly since then.
Yeah, that would be great to do. And
with the same persons, pull out your notes that you took.
There you go.
You know, and see how things measure up. Maybe serve those wines blind.
Mm-hmm.
Would be pretty interesting.
That would be fun. That would be great. Out of curiosity, what do you do when you don't finish the three bottles of wine? What's the best way to store it for the next day?
Well, I mean, I guess I opened a bottle of Chateau Reyes out of enthusiasm the other night. And Chateau Reyes, as you know, is
seems like a good
fabulous
idea.
Chateau Neuf du Pape producer. It seemed like a good idea, but drinking the entire thing was way too much wine,
sure.
I certainly didn't want to waste it. I put the cork back in it right away, and I put it in the refrigerator, and the temperature slowed down the oxidation of the wine significantly.
That's great.
And maybe it wasn't 100% the next day, but after 25, 30 minutes out of the refrigerator, it was back to cellar temperature and still probably 95% of its former self, and made 2 days pleasant instead
there
of just
go.
One.
Works out well.
But that's something that people... I think there's a million different little preservation systems where you pump gas out of bottles and all that kind of business, and I still have found none of those that are as successful as controlling the temperature really well.
Okay.
And I'm not talking about putting wine in the freezer. That's not going to do you any good.
No.
That does you as much good as catching fresh fish and putting it in the freezer right away. It's just going to dry it out.
Right.
So, okay, Cindy, so I'm going to turn the tables on you. So you're asking me all the wine questions. We're going to ask you the wine questions. What was the most exciting wine you've had in the last year?
I love Henri Bonneau's wine, and I had his 2001 Celestine, and it was just, his wine is just so beautiful. And I love the...
His wine comes from the dirtiest cellar I've ever been in.
Oh, gosh, you would say that. Okay.
It's the truth.
Oh, God.
It's the truth. He's also one of the greatest jokesters and storytellers.
That's awesome.
And really, really foul but superb humor from that man. So Henri Bonneau is a legendary grower in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, or was, may God rest his soul. Mm-hmm. And Cuvée de Célestin is his top bottling. And he's only made a limited number of years of that wine, but it's always this great, big, lusty, almost kirschy, you know, beef blood, smoky.
You're not making it sound very beautiful anymore, but it's really amazing. Your words are much better than mine, but yeah, that was great. And I would try as many of that wine as I could just to compare, because that's what I do love to do that, you know, different years. And
so maybe that's a goal for your own collection, is to find more Henri Bonneau so you can open a few together and actually compare them.
Yeah, that would be great. And Tony, what would you say? How would you answer the question, best wine in the last year?
That's terrible and evil question.
I have a chance to taste an awful lot of amazing stuff.
I think I have to think about it more, almost sort of most surprising. You know, when something's either surprising, is it disappointing or exciting or over-delivers for what it is. I'd opened a bottle that I did not realize I had sitting. This is going to sound like an odd, geeky thing, but... Mm. I think when something really over-delivers, it's impressive.
Sure.
I opened a bottle of 2001 Grüner Veltliner almost a year ago from Franz Hirzberger, the Rotustor bottling. And the wine at 13 years of age was crazy alive and spicy and smelled like white pepper exactly on the nose.
Oh, wow. Mm.
And some sort of green tea marmalade on the palate, and was dry as could be and vibrant and oily and... outrageous, and I need really badly to drink another one of those with a lot of great sushi.
Okay, well, that sounds amazing, and the world of wine—it's just so—it's
pretty endless stuff.
It's amazing.
Because it's a story of people and culture and humanity and nature.
Well, Tony, that was fun to talk about building a cellar, stocking a cellar, and I hope people are excited about it. And that's our show for today, Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. Thank you.